So for me, you know, the ideas that I come up with, I want to find redemption in them. And I've written some pretty dark stories. But for me, you know, I believe that there's redemption in all things. I believe that anything can be turned around.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. It's the podcast for artist makers and content creators where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. Once again, thank you so much for taking some time out to join us today. If you'd like to connect with me, you can do so over on Instagram. I'm at MikeBone, where I post daily. I've been doing that for the past 8+ years in my daily creative art journey, where every single day I'm posting a drawing or painting. So you can check that out over on Instagram. As well, you can visit my website, which is mikebrennan.me, M-E, for more of my work and creative services. And speaking of creativity, if you have not yet joined our new Daily Creative Habit group over on Facebook, it's a private Facebook group where we are talking about just all things creativity. I am sharing some things that I've learned along my path, going into some greater depth. And it's a community where you can ask questions and post some of your work and just really join in some of the creative projects that are going on. You know, I'm posting some challenges. And if you're someone who has been thinking about really getting under wraps this year, a more consistent daily creative habit, you know, you want to show up each and every day for your work. You want to finally move forward on those creative projects that you've been having for a long time. You know, they've been on your do list and you keep moving them. Well, maybe this is your year. This is when you can finally have some like-minded people come around you and encourage you for the journey and also learn some tips and tricks that may help you in showing up each and every day and making sure that you show up for your own artwork so that that artwork can then impact the lives of the people around you. So if you're interested in joining this free private Facebook group, you can go to dailycreativehabit.com and answer the few questions there, and it will let you right into our Facebook group. Now joining me on this week's episode is my guest, Michelle Mosley. And Michelle is an author and an editor, and she shares about her brand new young adult fantasy novel, Dakara. And we talk about just where that came from and her process in writing and editing. And we also talk a little bit about just her struggles with dyslexia and how that shaped her journey. And I know that many of you may resonate with just having to overcome an obstacle in your own creative journey. And so I hope that this offers you some encouragement to keep going, to push through. And Michelle was just a delight to speak to about her creative process and about her ideas and just getting to find out more about her and her creative journey. So without further ado, here is my creative chat with Michelle Mosley. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I would love for you just to start off by sharing a little bit of like who you are, what you do, you know, that line that you say at parties maybe, or you know, the old elevator.
Right. Well, I'm an editor, a writing coach, and a young adult fantasy author. Yes, that's the short version. I'm also the mom of two boys, and we're homeschooling this year, which is an adventure. But I guess the things that I enjoy most about my job is, you know, obviously I love telling stories, but I also really love helping other people tell theirs. And, you know, the journey that I've been on to become an author, I really enjoy sharing the things that I've learned in that journey with other people, because when I started off, I knew nothing and I had to gain all of these bits of information. So it's really exciting to me to be like, oh, I know the answer, and being able to help other people as well.
I love that heart and that attitude, because everybody is a beginner sometime. And a lot of times we find ourselves even going back to that place because we need to acquire new skills, new talents. And we always find our place, ourselves in that place of, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I don't know what the questions are to even ask, maybe, you know? So having people who have gone before us to be free with, you know, that information, their experiences could be so very valuable. So I'm excited to talk about some of that stuff today.
Me too.
So why don't you let us know, like, where did this begin for you? Like, was this something rooted in childhood where you were like, hey, I really loved to write. I love to dream up stories. Was it, you know, coming from your own experiences, reading stories? I mean, fill us in a little bit on where this the origins are.
Well, I like to say that it started in third grade and on Tuesday mornings at 10:30 in Mrs. Nation's class, because that was the time that we had creative writing. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, probably half an hour once a week where she gave us these sheets with columns on them. The first column had like a subject, second was a setting, and the third was a situation. And we had to use those prompts and create little stories. And most kids would write, you know, maybe up to a page. You know, we were still cursive. And for me, school was really difficult. Reading was really difficult. I was severely dyslexic and not diagnosed yet. Mm. So it was at that point that that was the only time when I could write and nobody was going to pay attention to the spelling. Nobody was going to pay attention to the handwriting. And I could just create stories. And I remember, you know, looking at these writing prompts and just kind of feeling this like breathlessness. I was so excited as, you know, these stories unfolded so quickly in my mind. And I wanted to get them down so fast. And I would write, you know, 4 or 5 pages while everyone else was writing, you know, maybe a page. And the way that we shared them was to stand up and read them, because I don't think she wanted to spend, you know, too much time reading all of these sure. little kids' stories. So, you know, some of us would volunteer, and I think if you didn't volunteer, you eventually had to, but some of us would volunteer to stand up and read our stories, and I got to read it out loud, so I would edit as I went. And I remember one time she was looking over my shoulder, and she's like, "This isn't what you wrote," and I'm like, "Yeah, I'm making it better." So it was the first time that I was in school and doing something that wasn't, you know, straight up art class that I felt, wow, I'm good at this. And I really, really love this. So creative writing, you know, created that spark in me when I was 8 years old. And I never thought that I could be a writer because of my dyslexia and how bad all of that was. Mm-hmm. So it started when I was very young. And then when I was a teenager, was when I really learned how to read. There were just books that I wanted to read so badly that I figured out how. My brain compensated. I was able to pick up tricks and get it done. And that was when I started writing books, because I realized that I could. Hmm.
So how do you think that, you know, learning that you had dyslexia and needing to figure out those hacks and things that you mentioned, how do you think that helped shape things for you? Like, are there, you know, maybe advantages that may have presented for you in, you know, maybe it causing a certain drive within you to be like, you know what, I have to do this. This is something I'm passionate about. Or, you know, whereas maybe something that may come easy for somebody else, they don't necessarily have that same ambition. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can't say that it created too much of an ambition. I mean, I am very, you know, rebellious by nature. If something's hard, I want to do it. Mm. But I can't say that dyslexia made me want to be a writer, just because reading and school were so traumatic for me growing up.
Yeah.
But I can definitely say that, so at least how it was explained to me in the fourth grade when I was diagnosed, my type of dyslexia is basically a right brain dominance. So the reason why it was so hard for me to read is because the right side of my brain was looking at all of these shapes and squiggles on this page and not being able to make order out of them. Mm-hmm. But it was also the right side of my brain that was, you know, that spark of creativity. I'm more creative than anything else. And I can't say that I would enjoy creating stories or characters or, you know, living in fantasy worlds in my mind if I weren't so right brain dominant. So the things that made it really difficult, I have to, you know, not say that that was a disability the way that some people call it a learning disability. I would just say I'm very differently wired. And unfortunately, our school systems aren't really geared towards kids who are wired differently, but finding my ways around that and to eventually function, learning that I didn't have to just give up in school, that I could try and I could find my own way of making it work. That was something that came later on in high school and college. But I'm thankful to have dyslexia. I wouldn't trade it because I do believe that that creativity is such an integral part of who I am. I don't know what I would be without it.
Sure. Yeah. And that's, you know, a lot of times I hear that in stories of people who they've had to overcome something or adapt in light of something, and learning to understand themselves better and how they operate and learning how to move into their process, and that may be a process that looks very different from somebody else, but it works for them and they're able to succeed in things, and they've learned how to harness the power of that. And so those are always great, you know, stories to encourage people, no matter what it is that they're facing, what they're struggling with, that you can do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me a little bit about, like, what did life look like after that? Did you pursue this from that point and said, you know, hey, I want to do this as my career? Or like, how did this look as the years unfolded?
Yeah, so I had a lot of very discouraging events happen in school. We moved out of state, so I switched schools out of state. So there was a completely different curriculum in the fifth grade. And my fifth grade teacher, while I was coming in the middle of the year, didn't really know how to pick up from nothing. So he kind of told me to do my best with the new way that they would do curriculum. And once I got to sixth grade, I kind of explained to that teacher that I was never taught how to do this. And she sort of said, like, well, I'm sorry your fifth grade teacher failed you, but I don't have time for that either, kind of thing. So in her class, I was doing so poorly on all of the exams. But when it came to creative writing, I was really excited at first, but then I realized that she didn't care about the stories I was reading. She cared about the grammar and the spelling more than anything else. So I couldn't win at that point. But I do remember it was that summer after sixth grade before seventh that I came up with a story that I kind of started writing. And I stopped after a few pages because I realized, like, first of all, in seventh grade, I had no idea what the publishing process was. But I knew at the very least that no one else was going to be able to decode this. Like, I couldn't even hand this in to someone to say, can you type this up for me? Like, I couldn't do that. So for my school assignments, my mom would type things up for me that I would read to her or just dictate. But for the creative stuff that I didn't necessarily want to share it with my mom or with anybody else yet. I was kind of like, oh, well, that's not really going to work out. So I stopped writing until a couple years later when I had found my favorite book series, the Bloody Jack series by L.A. Meyer, that came out when I was a teenager. And I devoured those books. The first one was about 200 pages, and I finished that in like a month. The second one was twice as long, and it took me 2 weeks. And then the third one was 500 pages, and I read it in 4 days. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess if I want it enough, I can read.
Sure.
And that's when I started writing my first novels, which were, you know, glorified Pirates of the Caribbean fan fiction. But that's where that bug kind of hit me. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And I need to find a way to do it. So I studying the books I was reading for what grammar looked like and how punctuation worked and where these quotation marks went. And just by studying the books that I loved, I was able to teach myself basic writing skills.
That's amazing. Because now, you know, you've managed to not just say, like, well, I'm going to learn enough to get by, but you're actually you know, doing this, you have editing services that you offer, right? I mean, so
yes,
this isn't just like a, hey, let me hack my way through for my own purposes. But now actually helping other people with this, that's incredible that you're able to do that, have your, you know, stories and your imagination, and then also have all the grammar and the things that go into the editing process. You know, it's interesting because when I was younger, and I come across this every so often with some other people who think, you know, it'd be great to write a book, I think, but I'm not great at spelling. I'm not great at grammar. And so there's this automatic association with thinking like you have to be great at the editing process and in grammar if you're going to be able to have a successful book, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think most people don't really think about the fact that there are different parts, I guess, and different parts of the process of mm-hmm. writing. Can you talk a little bit about like, what does that look like for you? Because maybe that'll help break down some of the barriers that someone might be thinking right now of like, yeah, I don't know where I fall in that.
Yeah. Well, there are different parts of the storytelling process, and likewise, there are different parts to editing. I've done everything from outline review, so I'll look at your outline and make sure everything is flowing nicely, that there isn't anything that glaringly doesn't make sense that you need to fix. I look at, you know, really early manuscripts and do what I call a developmental edit, which is looking at big picture kind of problems that need to be addressed before you go into the nitty-gritty. So before you even get into the technical stuff like grammar and spelling and all of that, there's so much that goes into storytelling. And there's so many people who are really good with grammar and spelling and where everything goes technically, but that haven't harnessed, you know, that storytelling, that like the bones that need to go into a story to get it right. And more often than not, I see people who are really, you know, really great at coming up with ideas and just need more help fleshing out, you know, how it's going to flow and how the bigger picture stuff is going to work. The nitty gritty, you know, nitpicking details, that is the very last thing you focus on. I offer, you know, copy editing and style editing, which looks at, you know, the sentence as a whole, how it flows kind of thing. You know, there's grammar in that, you know, we don't want technical errors, but just not knowing, you know, your commas or your spelling should never inhibit someone from writing, because that has so little to do with storytelling. If we think about, you know, the oral tradition, what people had long before they had the written word, it is so recent that everybody can read. And in some places, still, people don't read, they tell stories out loud. And having that ability to capture someone's attention and their imagination and excite them from a story, that is the bones of it. That is what you need. And it can also be taught, but no one should think that because they can't spell or because they don't know commas that they shouldn't be telling stories if they have a passion for it.
Yeah. And storytelling is one of those things where that's how we learn and that's how we relate to one another. You know, mm-hmm. when we can pass information and pass experiences and capture somebody's attention and draw them into something, a story can do so much more than just plain information or facts or figures. It's the thing that really can bring some passion and some momentum to the things that we're doing. And so I love storytelling as well. And, you know, for me, it's more visual a lot of times. And even with that, there are still aspects of, you know, writing that I need to employ, because if I'm making, you know, if I'm creating a blog post, and I'm telling the story of why I created this particular piece of art, I still need to tell the story from my perspective of like, this is why this is meaningful to me. This is the experience behind this, and understanding how to do that in a way that really connects with people, you know?
Right.
And one of the things too, that I think sometimes people get tripped up on is, you know, and I'm glad that you made that distinction between the different parts of the process, because you know, I found early on for myself, even this was an issue where, let's say it's even a blog post, it's necessarily something really long form, but this idea of, let me sit down and collect my thoughts and start writing this piece. and then the editing as you're going, as opposed to editing in a separate session. It was really, you know, I remember people encouraging me and saying, no, you need to just come up with the information for, you need to like kind of do like a brain dump and get all your ideas out and start to shape it. But like, let the editing process come later. Don't get in the way of keep, you know, you keep rewriting different sentences over and over again, and then you never really get through the process, right? I mean, have you found that exactly. to be true for a lot of people as well that you work with?
I find it to be true of some people. So for me personally, I have to handwrite all my first drafts, because if I start getting hung up on the technicalities, I will not continue writing. So if I'm writing in, you know, my dyslexic chicken scratch on, you know, legal sheets, which is truly, I mean, it's a coded language. I think my husband has learned how to somewhat decipher it, but I mean, it's also how I, you know, maintain my privacy. Nobody can read those except for me. If I do that, then it's like, oh, I forgot this character's name. I'm not even going to go bother looking it up. I'm just going to like put the first letter and keep going. Like I can't get hung up on things doing it that way. And then when I go back to it later, I usually, after I finish a draft, I'll take like a month off and then I'll come back to it before I start really typing it up and cleaning it. And that gives my brain some time to rest and separate from it. And I usually go back and be like, oh yeah, this was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But I have clients who, I mean, I've worked with people who do things very differently. I have one client right now who's sending me one chapter at a time, which would be agonizing for me as a writer to, you know, send one chapter at a time, revise it, write the next chapter, revise that. That would be so hard for me, but that's what's working for him. And so that's how we're doing it. I've worked with some people who probably really should take the time to, you know, write, maybe not handwrite, but just write completely separately from the rewriting process. And they have a really hard time doing that. So it really just depends on what works for you. I think one of the most important things to do as a writer is to find out what process is your own. Mm-hmm. Right now with the current draft I'm working on, I'm working backwards because I had a really solid ending, a really solid beginning, and the middle, this is pretty typical, the middle gets a little bit what we call messy middles. So I'm working backwards from the ending and being like, oh yeah, this detail needs to be in the middle. This detail needs to be in the middle. So I can make all of that equally as exciting because I know what needs to happen, but it's like, there's something missing here. So working backwards, I'm able to fix that. It's so important to find your process. Even every book might need a different process. And it's very easy to get hung up on like, well, this is the way to do it. You know, this is how my English teacher told me to do it. And creativity can't be put into a box like that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's methods and techniques and things, but they're there to serve us, not to bind
exactly.
us. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, it's funny because as you're saying those things, I'm thinking about even a friend of mine who doesn't like to write, you know, type, I should say, like even myself, like I'm more of a hunt and peck typer, right? So it takes me a long time to do that. And so this person, he's like, hey, you know, I don't actually sit and type any of these things. I dictate and then I have things transcribed and then I'll go back and clean up the transcription. And for him, you know, he knows that this process works best for him because he's better at, you know, verbally conveying these ideas and then having it being captured, you know, in a voice recording and then sending that off to be transcribed. And then again, like I said, having most of that kind of there, the and then cleaning it up, you know, then doing the editing process. So again, you know, find out what works for you and maybe even try some of these different things because you may not know what works best for you unless you're willing to, you know, explore some of these opportunities, right?
Absolutely.
So talk to me a little bit about like your stories now, like where do you find inspiration? What is it that you're trying to say in these stories? Like what really makes you come alive in these things?
Oh, it usually starts with, you know, I read a book called Writing Magic by Gail Carson Levine when I was a teenager, when I just started. And the thing that stuck with me the most there was that you need to make your character suffer in order for it to be a good book, because it's boring if they're just having a good time. So the meaner the author is, usually the more interesting the story. that's kind of stuck with me. So I guess it's less about like, oh, I really like this character. What should I have them do? It's more like, this is a pretty awful scenario. Let's see how I can fix this. So, so for me, you know, the ideas that I come up with, I want to find redemption in them. And I've written some pretty dark stories, but for me, you know, I believe that there's redemption in all things. I believe that anything can be turned around and used positively. Mm-hmm. So as, you know, dark and twisted as some of these stories get, my goal is always to find the hope in that and show that there's nothing that's beyond turning around, because that's my personal experience. So I think what excites me in the beginning is how mean I can be to my characters and how, you know, like, oh, well, what if this was happening? Oh, and then we could add this. And, you know, then it's almost like kind of like an editing process, you know, let's take this really broken situation and make it something really excellent. And, you know, it's not to say that I enjoy like really cheesy happy endings all the time, but it's more, you know, the real life applications that I want to apply have to do with, you know, every problem can be solved. Every darkness can have light to it. So that's it. I can't say it's something I strive for, because it's more like those things come out as I'm writing. I did hear one person recently at a writer's conference say, you know, don't look for the message, like don't write a message, you know, write a story and let the message surprise you. And that's really important to me, because no one likes to be sermonized through reading a novel. But you know, those things do, they tend to show up, and then I get really excited when I find them.
Hmm. I like that. Yeah. And especially the whole redemption theme, that's big for me as well. Even just in sharing my own experiences, you know, when I'm talking with people, whether it's one-on-one or from speaking, or any kind of interaction, if I can leverage my own experiences, and even the ones that are like, you know, that was kind of a dark season or something that really was painful to go through. You know, when I have opportunity in the right context to be able to lean into that and say, you know, but here's how I came through that. And here's what I learned from that. Here's how this made me a better person. Here's how, you know, learning to overcome that made me find a strength I didn't know that I had. Those are opportunities for redemption, not only for my own story, but then helping somebody else in their own story as well. So those are awesome moments, you know?
Yeah.
So you have a new book out, correct?
I do.
And yes. So talk to us a little bit about this new book and, you know, where did it come from? What are you excited about?
So it's called Darkara, Darcara. And that came from my husband and a friend of ours and I sitting around and having a deep philosophical discussion about fantasy novels, because that's what nerds do, just in case you were wondering. And we challenged each other to all come up with a unique dragon mythology, or at least, you know, unique to us. If we hadn't heard about it before, then it counted. So I came up with this idea of sort of dragons being these like part spirit, part beings. Like they exist in the physical, but they're really more of spiritual creatures. And people who could communicate with them and relay those messages to the public. But then what happens if, you know, the society rejects these beings as their, you know, givers of wisdom, as their leadership? What if, you know, instead of having dragons around now, you just have a really strong military who thinks that they're, you know, they're proving themselves by killing off all the dragons and now saying, look, we're more powerful. And then, you know, you have a character who has been trained in the military and she has this destiny of, you know, taking up this role, but turns out she can communicate with these dragons and they have a different destiny for her. They're not all killed off because they really can't be. And now, you know, shenanigans ensue. She has two different destinies and she honestly doesn't want either one. She's really tired of being told what to do. So that's how mean I am to her. Oh man. But my goal there was, or I guess, you know, what sort of came that was this, you know, this reluctance that comes from fear and that comes from trauma and how that can be turned around. And that was, that's sort of what came out of that story while I was writing it.
Mm, I love that. I love the insights that you just offered in that and how, you know, there's the entertainment value and then there's kind of the underlying insights and principles too, all working mm-hmm. hand in hand. So is this something that you self-published? Did you work with a publisher or what does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I have a small press called the Crossover Alliance. It's a traditional publisher, but they're just on a smaller scale. So I was able to, you know, get the editing and get, you know, the cover design and all of those things. And it, you know, kind of working very similarly to the way that you would think traditional publishing would work, except I didn't need an agent. You're able to submit to most small presses without an agent. And then kind of just, you're more involved with the process. I've gotten to have a bit more input than you normally would working with a big press. Hmm. I did purchase my own art from a friend, my cover art, because I knew that he would do a wonderful job and I had to check in with my publisher to make sure, can we use this, you know? So there are definitely some some meshings, I guess, of traditional publishing and independent publishing when you go to a small press or an independent publisher. But that was just what happened to work out with this book, and it's been pretty good. I can't say it's been full free of pitfalls because it's 2020, and there's plenty of things going wrong. My launch day was the 18th, and I still don't have physical copies in, so that's a bit of a bummer. But overall, you know, I'm pleased with the end result.
Mm, yeah. So, you know, I know that publishing end of things can be a whole other separate conversation, you know, because people have so many questions about that of like, how do I know if I should seek traditional publishing or self-publish or do like a small publishing, you know, house like you're talking about? And then understanding like what are the benefits to each one of those and what are the drawbacks to each one of those? I think no matter what, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, from what I've heard, regardless of if you go self-publishing or even more of a traditional route, you still have to have a very high interaction as far as marketing stuff yourself.
Yes, that is true. Even people with really big publishing contracts, they're still, you know, they look at how many people subscribe to your email list. They look at how many followers you have on Instagram and Facebook. And it's really important to agents and to publishers before you get signed that you have a platform that you can use. And then they expect you to use it. The people who kind of don't have to do that as much are ones who have been writing since before that was necessary, names that are really big already that someone will buy your book just because your name is on it. I don't think Stephen King is worried about how many people are following him on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. And, you know, I think that sometimes people think, well, if it's a big publishing house, more traditional, then they're going to take care of so many more things for me and that. And that may be true in some other instances, as far as maybe having more of a team or bigger, you know, resources, more resources available to you. But there's still that aspect of this is your work and you need to stand behind it and you need to be the person who is, you know, promoting it and talking about it wherever you can because you really believe in it. And I think that's mm-hmm. regardless of whatever you do, that's a skill that we all should learn how to leverage, you know.
Yeah. And for the big presses, you know, that benefit really comes in, you know, Barnes & Noble isn't going to put out a poster for Dark Hara. They don't know who I am. They don't know who the Crossover Alliance is. But, you know, HarperCollins emails Barnes & Noble and says, we have this book. We want to give you such and such money for promotional materials. They're going to do that. So there's a lot to be said for the connections that a big press can get you. But getting into that press is going to be the challenge. And what I found is that it's less about necessarily talent. I know some extremely talented, independent, small press authors. And you're kind of a slave to the market when you go to a big press. They look so much at saleability, at industry standard, at what has done well, and they don't really like to take risks on something that's a little bit different. My latest draft is, or I guess not draft, completed book that I've been querying a couple times. I haven't really dived into that process yet. But I had one agent tell me that she absolutely loved the writing style, but it has, I feature kind of this cult-like religion in it, and she said that religion is a really hard sell, especially for the YA market. I'm like, well, that makes sense. You know, I'm not like trying to convert anybody to this particular religion. It's a pretty mm-hmm. awful one, but I understand like nobody really wants to grapple with that topic right now in the market. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to find a larger traditional press or an agent for that book just because of how the market is right now. That being said, you know, a YA fantasy featuring some kind of a religious aspect could sell, you know, for six figures next week, and all of a sudden that's what everybody wants. So it really, it's such a fluid thing, as well as being so rigid in the rules until the rules change.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you find that within every industry where you're creating something like that. And there's a market that is always changing, and you need to keep on top of trends. And there's so many things that are outside your control of knowing. Maybe somebody came along and had something similar to you that is not released yet, but there it's in the works, and you weren't aware of that when you are trying to pitch an idea for something or, you know, trying to land a deal. And it's like, nope, sorry, you know, that's, we have something very close to that. And so that may block an avenue where, you know, it would have been okay. And then mm-hmm. these things, we don't really know these things until we start to just show up and engage with the process, right? I mean, that's how we're learning about these things, is by taking chances and stepping out and not being afraid, and looking for what the right next steps are, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
How did you know that this was like the best route for you to go? Like as far as the publishing?
Yeah. It was kind of a, you know, I started trying to query, and I think part of the failure there was that I was really bad at writing query letters. Like the things that I said were embarrassing now to look back on. But also I was just at a point where the manuscript wasn't ready. First books are really tough to sell because, I mean, most people, I think they sell their third or fourth manuscript that they've written. The only reason why I think this one was able to get picked up at all was because the publishing company was going through a bunch of changes after I submitted it, and they took, you know, about 10 months to actually read it and get back to me. And during that time, I revised it heavily and then resubmitted and said, hey, if you haven't had a chance to look at this yet, can you look at it now? And by that time it was, you know, what I would call good enough. And, you know, maybe it would be good enough for an agent. I think there were some issues with, I'm sorry, I don't mean good enough, just acceptable to an agent. I think there were some issues with marketability and, with being on point for what is expected of a young adult fantasy. It kind of breaks some of those molds. So I don't know if it would have been accepted had I known how to write a query letter, but I'm, you know, it all worked out. I'm very pleased with where I am and what the result was and what I've learned through this process. I was definitely not ready for the big dogs. That world would have eaten me alive. I don't think I would have ever written a book again. Mm-hmm. But now that I understand that industry so much better, I do feel more equipped to, you know, well, let's try this again. Let's try querying again. Let's see. Like, I'm more confident in myself to be able to say, no, my work is good enough and it deserves to be up here with these guys. That's a really scary thing to do. If you have a bunch of bestsellers on your bookshelf, you know, to look at them and be like, ooh, is my book, like, does it actually fit there between these two books? And being able to say, you know what, I think it does. It's still a scary thing to say, you know, imposter syndrome is real, but, believing in your work and also the your own willingness to make it everything it can be. You know, I'm not going to be so arrogant as to say, you know, oh, this book is 100% a slam dunk bestseller. I have enough in me to say, I know this story is really good. I know it can make a huge impact. And I'm willing to put in whatever work it will take to get it, to make it better.
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely. It's great advice. Great advice. And, you know, I'd love to just end on speaking of advice. I'd love to end on this question of what is something that maybe someone has given you as, in terms of advice that's been really helpful for you as far as your creative process, or maybe, you know, the business end of things, maybe it's mindset, something that someone has said to you that you've been like, you know what, this has really been something that I'm hanging on to for a while, continues to shape how you do things.
Yeah, I'd have to say probably one thing that I keep going back to over and over and over again was someone I met at a writer's conference. We were just in conversation. I can't remember her name now. And she said to me, you know what, you can edit the heart and soul out of your story. And that is so true. And as an editor, you know, my goal is to never do that. But you can get so hung up on what is technically correct or what seems like it should be or what is awkward, you know. There are, of course, those things you need to be careful of. You don't want to trip up your readers. You don't want something that's, you know, just, wait, this isn't readable, you know. Mm-hmm. But you have to make sure that when it's your own work or if you're looking at someone else's, that you're seeing the power there to go outside the box. And I think that's one of the reasons why indie publishing is such a big deal. Because, you know, when no one else is calling the shots, you can say, no, this is part of the heart of the story. This is important. This needs to stay in there. And your readers might resonate with it while a, you know, big press publisher would be too scared to include it in there. So for me, in my own writing, I try to keep that in mind. If there's something where it's like, you know what, I'm going to take this chance. I'm going to put this bit of my own voice in here that might be a little unconventional. If my, you know, beta readers are like, what on earth is this? Then maybe I'll consider taking it out. Mm-hmm. But it's so important to take those risks and to not strive to conform to that market, because again, it changes so often. You just need to be able to hold on to your own voice and only change what absolutely needs to be changed. I guess if it's going to make the story harder to read, then maybe take it out. But those things, those bits of our hearts that we put into our stories are the reason people read.
Absolutely. Yeah. You need to have your fingerprints all over it. And I love that advice of take the risks, you know, be willing to show up and step out and go for it. And even if you fail, then just learn from that failure. But at least you know that you've shown up and you've tried and you've given it your best. So awesome stuff. So as we close up here, where can people find you? How can they buy your book? And if they are interested in maybe some of the editing services, how can they get a hold of you?
Best way to contact me is through my website, kmichellemosley.com. That's, you know, K and then no spaces or dots or anything, MichelleMosley.com. Same spelling, everything on Instagram and Facebook. So just look me up and I'm always happy to be in touch. I really love getting questions about writing and, you know, how things work, and I'm always here to help.
Great. We'll be sure to put those in the show notes so that's easy for people just to click and find you and connect with you. And I want to thank you for showing up with your gifts and your talents and also being free to help other people with their gifts and abilities as well. I think that's really ultimately what it all comes down to, is not just about us and the work that we can do, but how it can impact other people and how we can help them along the way as well. So yeah, thank you so much for this time together. It was awesome. So appreciate you taking the time out.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Take care.
You too.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.